Nor was she at all secretive about this part of her work or about her faith. The introduction to volume 2 of her collected philosophical papers, for instance, opens thus. Some of the papers in this volume were written for the general public, for ordinary philosophical meetings, or for philosophical journals. Others were composed to express an explicitly Catholic view. It is not surprising, then, that the rationality of faith was a vitally important topic in her thinking. What may seem more surprising is the kind of relevance that she accorded to reason as a standard that could not be disregarded by faith. She rejects the rationalism of a position that she attributes to, quote, the propagandists of the rationality that is near demonstrability of faith. According to Anscombe, theological rationalism can take various forms. Here is one version that she considers. You start with the belief that God exists. The miracles reported in the New Testament convince you of the divinity of Jesus. His authority then makes you accept a church with a pope at the head of it. The Catholic Church can be identified with this institution established by Christ, and so its teaching tells you what to believe. All these steps have to be reached by proof. So far, the kind of theological rationalism that is her target. Anscombe sketches various problems raised by this kind of position. Confronted with that way of justifying faith, both believers and unbelievers should find, I'm quoting, the arguments difficult to be sure about. Hence the problem most commonly felt as to the character of the certainty ascribed to faith. End of quote. Her criticism of the rationalist position culminates in the question, what about the faith of the simple? They could not know all these things. Did they then have some inferior brand of faith? Surely not. And anyway, did those who studied really think they knew all these things? What then is Anscombe's positive account of the role of reason in connection with faith? I think there are three particularly important and relevant tasks that her writings ascribe to reason. First, it helps us separate the content of faith from anything one may or has to believe or know in the way of presuppositions of faith, and to see on this basis whether faith is irrational. Second, reason enables one to defend one's faith against charges of irrationality and other kinds of doubt. And finally, reason is required where one seeks a deeper understanding of this or that aspect of scripture or of doctrine or of Christian practice that one accepts as a believer. The third task is that of theology, trying to understand Christian doctrine and practice. Anscombe did not think of herself as a theologian, but quite a number of her writings, such as On Transubstantiation, On Attachment to Things and Obedience to God, or On Sin, must be counted as brief, sometimes very brief, theological treatises. So much about the third task of reason. What about reason as defense of fidei, as an instrument for defending the faith against accusations of irrationality and other arguments? How does this task differ from the rationalist ideal of proving faith to be based on good reasons? Well, Here is what she says about the learned. Their service is to clear away the rubbish which the human reason so often throws in the way to create obstacles. She must have viewed many of her own works, including some purely philosophical ones, as contributing to precisely this sort of an underlaborer's work. And now I finally come to the first of the roles that reason has to play, according to Anscombe, in the service of faith, namely the investigation of presuppositions and perhaps reasons. Faith has presuppositions that are not themselves part of its content. For faith is not just believing certain things, perhaps things religious. No. Faith is, as Anscombe says, in accordance with tradition, believing God what he tells you. In this sense, Jews and Christians have a faith, whereas Buddhists and Hindus haven't. What then are the presuppositions you are making if you believe God that such and such? They include, above all, the following three propositions. First, God exists. That is not part of Christian doctrine. It's not part of the content of your Christian belief, if you have it. You cannot trust another. You cannot believe God. You cannot trust another without taking him to exist. So in particular, you cannot take his word for what... You cannot take his word for it that he exists without already taking him to exist. Second presupposition. God has in some way addressed you. In believing others, what they say, you are presupposing that they do say something. And third, the third proposition that is a presupposition of one's Christian faith, God means what you take him to mean. You have to presuppose that this is at least to some extent the case in order for your faith to have any content. All this Anscombe explains at greater length in her article on faith, in which she wants, I'm quoting, to say what might be understood about faith by someone who did not have any, someone even who does not necessarily believe that God exists, but who is able to think carefully and truthfully about it. To this extent, the article contributes also to the second apologetic task of reason in the service of faith. But educated believers, too, should want to know why their faith is not open to the charge of irrationality. What does Anscombe have to say about this? So far, she seems to be saying merely, there are indeed presuppositions of faith, but their role is not to be proved so as to turn into reasons for believing. Rather, you cannot have the Christian faith without believing them true. So they are not much help in the way to answering the crucial question, how is it possible to accept the Christian faith without being irrational? Well, how does faith come about? Anscombe's answer. You hear that such and such is the content of faith, and it is to be believed from someone who may be ignorant of everything except that these are the things that faith believes. And she again insists, with a view to both the witness of faith and his or her addressee, that few can be learned, and their learning doesn't give them a superior kind of faith. As far as I can see, there are two more positive things of great importance that she says about this topic. First, presuppositions don't have to be temporary prior beliefs. In particular, you may come to believe that God exists and that he addresses you simultaneously with acquiring the faith. You may accept those propositions in experiencing something as being to be believed because told you by God. And second, somebody else is trying to convert you to the faith may constitute an experience in which you hear God speaking to you. But it may also be no more than a contribution to such an experience. What is important is that such a thing as your believing that God has spoken to you in somebody's words or in some other event can happen to you. I'm quoting again, it happened to St. Augustine, hearing the child's cry, tolle legge. St. Augustine in the Confessions reports that when you heard a child crying, take and read, he took up scripture and met a passage that led to his final conversion. Anscombe's article, Faith, does not say much more about these two points, about the possibility of acquiring the presuppositions of faith together with the faith itself, and about the way in which an experience may be for you an experience of being told something by God. So she does not say much about it. Instead, she raises but does not answer the difficulty that, quote, God cannot be formally identified as the God of such and such a cult or such and such a people. So, believers cannot rely on any such identification, on a tradition, for example, in explaining to themselves or others who it is that they believe what they believe in. But what she says is enough, I think, to give us an idea of what is meant by saying that faith is a gift of God and not a conclusion from reasons, even though it is not therefore something that militates against or cannot be prepared or backed by reason. Let me end by reading to you a sort of story from this paper on faith, which is calculated to give us a better understanding of the two positive points that I have mentioned. Suppose, she writes, a prisoner in a dungeon to whom there arrives a letter saying, this letter comes from an unknown friend, N. The letter proposes to help him in various needs which he is invited to communicate by specified means. Perhaps it also holds out hope of escape from the prison. The prisoner doesn't know if it is a hoax or a trap or is genuine, but he tries the channels of communication and he gets some of the things that he asks for. He also gets further letters, ostensibly from the same source. These letters sometimes contain information. We will suppose that he now believes that N exists and is the author of all these letters, and that he believes the information as coming from N. That is, his belief in that information is a case of believing N. His belief that N exists and that the letters come from N is not an example of believing something on N's say-so. On the other hand, as we are supposing the case, he does not have prior knowledge of N's existence. And it could happen that he believes the opening communication, this is from an unknown friend, call me N, straight off, just as he'd likely believe straight off that a whispered or tapped communication purporting to come from the next cell is a communication from another prisoner. This is what I wanted to tell you about the importance of Anscombe.